flashback for you, yeah. Yep.
It is 10, but we're going to start in maybe a couple of minutes to allow people to park and the like. Okay, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Interested Persons Meeting of the Fair Political Practices Commission. I'm Ann Ravel, Chair of the Commission. Through the really excellent work of our staff, the FPPC uncovered the most extensive campaign treasurer fraud in the history of California. This is evidence of the central role that the FPPC plays in ensuring trust in the political process and in government. The purpose of the Political Reform Act and the FPPC regulations is transparency and information so people can fairly participate in the voting process. We're here today not to make any decisions about how the FPPC will respond to this unprecedented fraud, but to hear from victims and the public about the impact of the fraud, as well as to hear your views about how to respond. We encourage everyone here and on the phone to testify about your concerns and your issues, either today or before the entire commission on October 13th in Los Angeles. Only after we receive your testimony, comments by email or letter are also appreciated. We will also be doing extensive legal research on all the legal issues. Only then will we be able to craft the most thoughtful and narrowly tailored response to the problem that's before us. Ultimately, the FPPC and the legislature will have to address the underlying causes of treasurer malfeasance to prevent it from happening again. We know there are some things we can do right away that will make a difference. Since the Enforcement Division now has the technical ability to provide more information to the public, a listing will be posted on the FPPC website of all prosecutions of campaign treasurers by name and or by company. This listing will be updated every month to reflect any findings of violations and will provide access, a link to all the supporting documentation. Currently, also, there is no mandated training for professional or volunteer campaign treasurers. Mandating training would not only assist with compliance of the Political Reform Act, but it would also serve as a tool to eliminate fraud by making treasurers aware of our recognition of fraudulent practices and the tools that we have available, as was demonstrated in this case, if fraud is suspected. Also, we do have some ideas about changes in our regulations and for other legislation that can make this less likely to recur. In October, at the meeting in LA, we'll be asking the Commission to consider the best approach to enact regulations and to propose legislation. But this meeting today is to hear about the immediate concerns about how to respond to this particular incident, not long-term fixes to the system. Once again, we do invite you to give us all your thoughts and concerns regarding this fraud and potential responses to it. I'm joined here today by, as is usual in an interested persons meeting, by FPPC staff. And to my far right is Linda Cassidy, who is the chief of the Technical Assistance Division, Gary Winnick, who is chief of enforcement. To my left is Zachary Morazzini, the general counsel of the FPPC, and to his left is Hyla Wagner, who is senior commission counsel. Each of them, the chiefs, will give a brief statement before we begin with the testimony from the audience and from those of you who are participating by phone. We'll take first, in order to proceed in a more orderly fashion, we'll take testimony from people in the audience, after which we'll invite people on the phone to participate. Also, as you will see, it was mentioned to me by somebody out there, now I have to comb my hair before an IP meeting, which is unusual. We are being streamed live on both the commission website at fppc.ca.gov and also on calspan.org, and it is also, this meeting is also available on smartphones. So I'll turn it over to Mr. Morazzini.
Thanks, Ann. Again, my name is Zach Morazzini. I'm the general counsel here at the commission. I, as many of you can probably guess, there are myriad legal issues presented, and I've been bombarded with lots of them. But I want to encourage you to reach out, not only just here today, but via email to myself or others at the commission with any thoughts you have. We're putting a lot of effort into crafting what we hope will be the most effective solutions to assist everyone through this difficult process that they're facing, and to also ultimately come up with long-term solutions. So I just want to let everybody know that I'm very available to talk either on the phone or via email or other correspondence. So thank you.
Thanks, Zach. Gary.
Good morning. Again, I'm Gary Winnick, chief of the Enforcement Division. Just to frame the discussion, I'd like to give just a brief overview of how we got to this point. By way of background, the FPPC Enforcement Division is required by statute to perform certain audits of campaign accounts, included in that are Board of Equalization accounts. So as part of our duties in 2009, we performed an audit of the Jerome Horton for State Board of Equalization campaign. As part of that audit, one of our auditors, Grant Beauchamp, noticed things that raised red flags to him as an auditor, and he proactively made all of us aware of those issues, and then we decided to take a harder and bigger look at what was going on with the Durkee & Associates firm based on that information. So in 2010, we expanded the audit using our statutory discretion to expand our audit capabilities to take a broader look at Ms. Durkee's overall activity with regard to state political campaigns. As a part of that audit, we noticed that the problem was larger than just limited to Jerome Horton. In fact, it was so large we realized it was impacting federal candidates as well. So at that point, we had reached the limits of our jurisdiction as a state agency and realized that there were potential victims of a potential crime there and that we needed to make appropriate authorities aware of it. So as part of that, we work with our partners at the Federal Bureau of Investigation, with whom we work closely on many things as we try and develop partnerships with a lot of state and local law enforcement and ethics enforcement agencies. And in our course of our meetings with them, they picked up the case and recognized the importance of it and moved with all swiftness to get to where we are today, to where they've put forward a criminal indictment. So that's a brief overview of how we got to our space here today. And I look forward to providing any further information I can on that.
Thanks, Gary. Ms. Cassidy.
Good morning. Linda Cassidy with the FPPC's Technical Assistance Division. It is my division that basically advises the public and the committee on all the campaign rules and requirements. And I would like to state that to date, our staff has taken a significant volume of calls from committees, primarily local committees, who had Kendi Durkee as their treasurer. By and large, most of those callers basically had no knowledge of what the campaign rules and requirements are, as they relied on Ms. Durkee to fulfill all of their responsibilities. So towards that end, we've basically spent substantial amount of time walking these individuals through the process and how they can open new committees and continue on with their activities. Fortunately, for most of the committees, the next campaign filing deadline is not until January 31st, 2012. And so we will be publishing guidance before the end of the calendar year on campaign reporting requirements. There have been a few committees that are affected by Los Angeles's November election, and we advise that such committees do need to file reports as best as they can with the information available. Lastly, I'd like to add that my staff will be coordinating information with the campaign filing officers in Orange County, LA County, and with staff at the Secretary of State's office. And I'll make sure every attempt is made that information is easily available to all interested parties and the public. Thank you.
Thank you. Now we'll open it up to any comments from the audience. Good morning.
Morning.
Welcome.
I hate to interrupt you. I think you need to turn your microphone.
I'll just start with my name. Stephen Kaufman of Kaufman Legal Group in Los Angeles. Good morning, Chair Ravel and assorted others. I am appearing here today to talk on behalf of a number of clients we have. We represent a number of candidates and committees throughout the state who were victimized by Kendi Durkee and Durkee and Associates. Perhaps most significantly, the Los Angeles County Democratic Party. And I wanted to present our thoughts on perhaps a half dozen or so items, some of which I think have been mentioned along the way, but things that would help those who've been victimized by the process here and perhaps enable people to move forward and do what they need to do in advance of the 2012 election and beyond. I have to say I applaud the FPPC for getting to the bottom of this, and Grant Beecham, who I know is sitting out there. I think a lot of times auditors tend to approach these audits by looking at was something reported properly, is there proper documentation, and I'm afraid in the process the big picture has been lost, and perhaps now there will be a renewed focus on the bigger picture when committees are audited, and I'm pleased to see the FPPC is taking a more proactive role in that sense. I have a few items I'd like to lay out for discussion, some of which I think can be handled by the FPPC, perhaps in an advice letter or simple fact sheets, some of which will likely require regulatory changes, perhaps through an emergency regulation, and some of which may rely on legislation. And I'll start from what I think are perhaps the simple issues to the more complicated. But the first one is the single bank account rule that requires committees to maintain one bank account for their activities, and that all contributions and expenditures need to be paid out of that single bank account. And I think it would be behoove the FPPC to publish something in the form of an advisory or some sort of fact sheet that enables committees who have their bank accounts frozen now at First California Bank to let them know it is okay to open new bank accounts to accept new funds into and continue with their activities. I know some committees have been concerned about that, and I'm sure, Linda, you received calls about that. But I think the FPPC needs to do something proactive to let people know that that's okay.
Stephen, can I ask, on all of the items that you're going to list, can you also discuss the urgency, the perceived urgency to each?
I think that's the first one's imperative. I mean, if people have been scrambling over the last 3 weeks to try and get their paperwork change their treasurer, obviously, and get new bank accounts open so they can start receiving some money to start to rebuild their campaign accounts. So I think that's a necessity, particularly with the 2012 elections just around the corner, to let people know that it's okay to do that. I know we've certainly proceeded to open new bank accounts on behalf of a number of clients, assuming that that's a common sense solution, but I think people need to hear that. I think the next issue is the issue of upcoming reports and future reporting, given that a lot of the committees don't have access to their account information, don't have access to their campaign databases, and even their files and records. A lot of people are going to have to file reports that are going to be incomplete. And we can do what we can to try and recreate perhaps what came before us with respect to a lot of these committees, but it's an impossible task. And I suspect that between now and the end of the year, a lot of this is going to remain unresolved. Files and records still exist at the old offices of Durkee and Associates, and people's databases are going to be incomplete. They may have information through the last filing period, which was June 30th, but there will likely be a gap between June 30th and essentially now when they begin anew. So I think consideration is going to need to be given to those people who are going to be filing reports. And you know, I would urge the FPPC to provide direction, as Linda seemed to suggest you might. I think there should be a process for those who are in this situation to perhaps be able to identify in some way when they're filing reports that they have incomplete records, or they're filing it subject to, you know, whatever is issued, so that that can be flagged, and later on when there are audits done or the enforcement process comes around, that there will be an understanding that those reports were filed without the information. And, of course, when information becomes available, that there will be amendments made.
Let me interject just a moment, because Mr. Winnick whispered to me something that relates to this, which is that with respect to this matter that you're concerned about, even though I said we weren't going to take any action, we will not be pursuing enforcement matters with regard to this. We're very understanding of this problem.
Good. I'm pleased to hear that, as I'm sure others are in the audience. And I guess similarly, now taking a step back, reports that were filed previously by people not knowing that they were in fact inaccurate, needless to say, that raises other enforcement issues. And I would imagine there's some that are already in the process and others that will come before you in the future. And I would hope that you would take the same approach with past reports by either providing some kind of immunity to the committees, or as an alternative, imposing solely liability on the treasurer and not on the committees or the candidates in those instances where the violations arise as a result of the malfeasance of the treasurer. The next item is record keeping issues, and I guess those dovetail with the incomplete reporting, but in the same way that folks don't have access to their information to be able to provide complete reports, you know, those records are unavailable, and frankly at this point no one knows what kind of shape the records are in. The Political Reform Act and the regulations have numerous requirements on treasurers and committees to maintain records in a certain form and for a certain period of time. And I would hope you would recognize the situation here in how those committees ultimately get audited and perhaps enforced in the future. And similar to what I said earlier, we would urge that the commission either take an approach of immunity for committees and candidates who were subject to the actions of the Durkee firm, or that liability be imposed solely on the treasurer for any failing by those committees to meet the record-keeping requirements.
If I can interject, this is Gary Winnick again, the enforcement chief. Per the chair's direction, for any violations that are directly due to the malfeasance of Kindy Durkee, the enforcement division, of course, has prosecutor discretion and will not be pursuing enforcement-related matters on that.
Yeah. Pleased to hear that. Thank you for that. I say for last, maybe the two most difficult issues that you'll have to deal with. One is legal defense funds. I know there's been some comments in the press about legal defense funds, and the regulations certainly define legal defense funds in a fairly narrow sense. I do think, given the recent developments, that an interpleader lawsuit is being filed, and that people will be named as essentially defendants in that suit, that the FPPC should confirm, again, perhaps in a fact sheet or otherwise, that the defense of the interpleader action itself is certainly within the scope of the existing regulations. But I would also urge that the FPPC issue some kind of interpretation, be it by an advisory opinion or advice letter, or even, again, by virtue of a fact sheet, that efforts undertaken by victims of these alleged crimes to recover their money, whether by virtue of the defense of an interpleader action or perhaps pursuit of other legal action, would still be considered defending themselves against these actions for purposes of qualifying under the legal defense fund and being able to raise funds to pay for their efforts to recover their money one way or the other. The interpleader action only goes so far, frankly, in that it'll hopefully allow people to access whatever remaining funds they have, but that doesn't get to the issue of those funds that may be missing and any efforts that may be undertaken to try and recover those funds. So I would urge your consideration on that. The final issue is contribution limits. I know a lot of people have opinions on this and whether contribution limits should be extended for committees that receive contributions that they no longer have the benefit of. And I know this is a complicated issue, and I'm sure there will be lots of voices speaking on both sides of this. But I think that the commission should give serious consideration under the facts here, given that a number of committees never saw the money, never saw the benefit of the money that was obtained, and it's, in some cases anyway, functionally the equivalent of having received a contribution that that bounced or was returned for some other reason, they never got the benefit of the money. And I would ask you over the course of the next few weeks to consider ways that people may be able to establish that contributions that may have been reported were never, in fact, used by them or their committees. I realize that will take some sort of accounting method to be able to establish that, but I think if people can, in fact, establish that the money they received either never hit their accounts or perhaps hit their accounts but was never put to use and can make that showing, that I would urge the commission to be receptive to either sponsoring legislation or trying to move the ball forward on having additional limits imposed or new limits imposed for those donors to committees where they can prove that that the money was never put to use and not available to them.
Stephen, with regard to this, have you given any thought to going forward, assuming that were the action that the commission took, going forward to ensure that there isn't double usage of those funds?
It's a complicated issue. No one's exactly sure where this interpleader case is going to lead at this point. And I do recognize that making a snap decision to allow people to raise additional funds only for them to be able to access those funds later poses a dilemma. So there's going to have to be some system put in place to avoid that type of result. But I will say that I know, at least in the case of some clients, you know, there are obvious examples where money was received and a deposit, frankly, was never put into their bank account. Where it went, we don't know. But, you know, clearly whatever money they may get, they're not going to be able to get those funds. And, you know, there are other examples that I think if people can establish that the money's no longer in their account through an accounting method and the court ultimately in the interpleader action, you know, awards funds that somehow capture those contributions, there, you know, would have to be some process for refunds to be made so that people don't get the double benefit of any money that comes in. I don't have the silver bullet solution right now, but I would think through accounting and proof and some mechanism developed by the FPPC that could be done. I'm happy to answer any other questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. Ms. Getman.
Good morning. I did not comb my hair, but I'll do it next time. I'm Karen Getman from Remcho, Johansson & Purcell, and with my partner, James Harrison, we're here representing Assemblyman Jose Solario. And I'm sorry he couldn't be here in person. He's down in the district today. But he did want me to extend his gratitude to the commission for uncovering this and for reporting it to the FBI so that we were able to at least save some of our funds. I do want, first of all, to inform the commission and staff about the real practical problems that are happening, the difficulties that we are having, because for Assemblyman Solario, we've really been doubly victimized. We're victimized by Kindy Durkee, but we're also being victimized by the bank, whose recalcitrance in doing anything to assist the victims of the Durkee crime has been just astonishing to us. I think we've told you informally that we could not even get our bank records from the bank. To this day, I don't have bank statements for all of the Assemblyman's account. When we asked for those statements, we were told that we needed to present proof that we were the rightful owners, which we gave. When Assemblyman Solario came with the proof that the bank had requested that he was the rightful owner of those accounts, he was given an indemnification form. If we would indemnify the bank from any and all legal liability that they may have had in this scheme, then we could get our bank statements. We said no, of course. So we still don't have those bank statements for all of the accounts. Every penny of our money is frozen in all of the accounts, including ones that look like Kindy Durkee didn't touch. There may have been, believe it or not, one or two accounts in the world that she did not touch, although she seems to have touched most of them. We can't get one penny of that money. If the interpleader action, I take it it's been filed, we haven't been served with it. That's going to take years to unravel. And defending Assemblyman Solario in the interpleader action is doubly hard because, let me say it again, every penny is frozen. Every single penny that he could use for a defense, for filing fees, everything is frozen at this point. I finally was able to get in touch with the bank's attorney to ask him if he could facilitate getting us at least our bank statements. His response to me was that he would get to it, quote, in God's good time. And that if I wanted it done any earlier, I should call Kindy Durkee because she's now out on bail. I say all of this to make you understand that we're not going to see this money from the bank for a very long time. Now, thank goodness we can report that bank examiners are down there. They're looking at the bank. Hopefully, they will help unravel some of this, but it's going to be a long time before we have access to even a penny of what's left. And these are people who have to go, they're running for office, they have office holder accounts that are frozen, everything is frozen. The U.S. attorney is extremely pessimistic that we're going to get any significant money back by way of restitution. So that doesn't seem to be a process that's going to result in any real return of our contributions that were stolen. We're obviously looking seriously at litigation against the bank. Again, that's difficult to fund when all your money is frozen. So we really, really are in a bind, and the Assemblyman is trying to figure out ways to propose some things to you that will make some practical sense for candidates like him going forward, while following the contribution limits and all the rules that are so important. I'm glad that Stephen mentioned the single bank account and the legal defense fund. We do think that the legal defense fund hopefully needs to be broader than, for instance, just defending the interpleader. It has taken an amazing amount of time as a lawyer already just to get the minimum amount of information that we've been able to get from the bank. And our records, by the way, and I assume most other people's, we have gotten nothing from the Durkee firm. We get no response from them on anything. There is an attorney down there who's acting sort of as a receiver trying to go through things. But his first call that he said is to respond to grand jury subpoenas. So all of our records from the Durkee firm obviously have been subpoenaed by the federal grand jury. We won't get access to any of them until the grand jury subpoena is taken care of. So I have no clue when we will have anything that vaguely resembles a statement from the Durkee firm, the database, anything. When we are eventually able to file some sort of report, not only is it going to be almost impossible to sort of go back and recreate much of what happened, but if we did try to report what actually happened, in essence, we'd be creating a false report for you. We would be saying that Assemblyman Solario gave tens of thousands of dollars way over the limit to federal candidates. He never intended to do any such thing. He didn't do any such thing. And so putting something like that down in a report, because that's the transaction that Kindy Durkee did, would actually be filing another false report. So I think as a practical matter, we're going to need to figure out some way to kind of get everybody's balances up to where they are and start fresh, because I don't know that anything that we undo in anything other than kind of showing you the dollar amounts is going to really have any kind. It's not a meaningful disclosure to the public to say Assemblyman Solario gave $40,000 to a congressional candidate. He didn't. And by the way, the money went immediately out of that congressional candidate's bank account to somebody else's account. So even if there was that minimal transaction from one to the other, my understanding, and based on what we've been able to gather from the U.S. Attorney and the FBI, is that the money didn't stay in that other account anyway. Everything was moving immediately. So there's no real kind of public disclosure in the way that you normally think about it. Contributions weren't contributions. Expenditures weren't expenditures. It was all just bank transactions conducted by Kindy Durkee. And that leads to the next subject. I mean, we've been giving a lot of thought to what candidates and committees can do under this circumstance to try to raise funds to get back some of what was lost. And you know, we've lost somewhere in the nature of $700,000 or $800,000. The contributions that we thought we had received for our prior elections, under your own regulation, we really didn't receive them, because it turns out that we didn't have an agent who took direction and control of those contributions in our behalf. So I think one possibility is sort of acknowledging the fact that the contributions really weren't received by Assemblyman Solario. They were received by Kindy Durkee, who used them for her own personal gain. And I think the records are going to reflect that. Since they weren't really received, in essence, I am hoping that what we can do is allow us to receive contributions for those prior elections to make up the money, subject to all the contribution limits of the prior elections. And perhaps one way to do that is to treat the money that was lost as a net debt to those committees for those elections, so that you could fundraise for the losses in the same way that you fundraise for net debt, subject to each of the contribution limits. We would be delighted to at some point be in the place where we could give back money. Once we get our hands on any part of this, we would be delighted to refund to any contributor who came up in the meantime to try to help. But the money that we lost was the result of fundraising for a number of elections. And so just fundraising for the Assemblyman's next election for or for his current office holder account really isn't going to allow him to be made whole. So we do hope that you'll look at your regulation 18421.1 and the definition of when a contribution is received, because we think under that definition, these contributions really were never received by our committee to begin with. And then your net debt rule, which is regulation 18531.61, which I'm hoping something like that can be dealt with to help get some of the money back for each of those elections fully within the contribution limits for those elections. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody? Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Chair Ravel and Commissioners. Bradley Hertz with the Sutton Law Firm. It feels somewhat like a funeral. It's good to see you, but I wish it were not under these circumstances. And the magnitude of this is truly staggering when you look at the complaint and interpleader, which has been filed in L.A. Superior Court. There are 8 pages of single-space listings of the defendants, which are really the victims, of course, and alleged victims of this unfortunate situation. The interpleader action is particularly cruel because all the money that remained, about $2.5 million, was paid over to the court, and now that puts all of the victimized campaign committees in the position of, one, having to pay a court filing fee of several hundred dollars just to have a day in court, two, presumably having to retain counsel, and three, having to wind their way through the court system with commingled accounts We have a client who said, what if we want to opt out of the interpleader, take our losses, accept the dollar amount that's listed for our committee? Could we do that? And the bank said, no, we're throwing up our hands. We're putting everything into the court's hands. And we want the court to absolve us, the bank, of all responsibility and pay the bank's attorney's fees and costs. So that is, to me, the definition of chutzpah. As far as systemic improvements, I know that will be discussed at a later date, but Jim Sutton and I were fortunate to have an op-ed piece published in the LA Times this week, and that called for really a proactive compliance and accounting fund where committees could raise money dedicated for that purpose, and unlike a legal defense fund, which is after the fact. There were a few matters that I don't believe have been discussed yet. One is already completed enforcement matters where stipulations were entered into, fines were paid even as recently as a week or two ago, and now it has been determined or will be determined that those were the actions of Kindy Durkee and her firm and not really the controlling candidate or the committee. And so if there's a way to review those, even though they're done deals, I think that may be appropriate. Secondly, there would be some concerns about posting of treasurer information on the commission's website to the extent that those other treasurers may have some due process rights. I'm a little concerned that we may sweep in too many treasurers if they settled an enforcement action, let's say, that a city attorney brought without admitting liability and yet they paid some money. I would just think maybe there should be an interested persons meeting or some possibility for input so it can be determined that the public is getting accurate, appropriate information, but that it's not overbroad. And in addition to that, from the FBI declaration that's attached to the criminal complaint, it appears that some funds were transferred from a candidate committee to a different candidate committee, presumably without either candidate knowing. And so presumably that would not count as a contribution if the candidate never had that intent. It was, you know, a shell game, unfortunately, of commingling funds without the knowledge of the committee or the candidate. And finally, some of our clients are literally very small mom-and-pop type committees, a neighborhood PAC, a very small Chamber of Commerce-related PAC. This has devastated them. They're trying to get out of this situation. They're trying to recoup some money. And so there's really a very difficult situation that they're in. It really puts a black eye on our whole business, which we have a lot of very professional treasurers and attorneys doing their very best to comply with the law and advise clients to comply with the law. And so this is unfortunate, at best, tragic at worst, and I thank you for being proactive in helping us and our clients deal with the aftermath.
Thank you. Let me make just a couple of comments. Thank you for your presentation. With regard to the already completed enforcement matters, we have looked at those and are fairly confident that they are unrelated to any of the fraud that is the subject of this matter that we're here for today. But we will ensure that and look at that again. And then the other issue that you raised about the posting, it's contemplated that we would only post our own matters that where a final decision has been made. We would not post any of any other agencies that we don't know what the process would be. But if you still have due process concerns about that, we certainly will discuss it with you.
Okay, thank you. And I may address separately the issue of the closed enforcement matters to the extent an internal investigation reveals that maybe it was the responsibility of the Durkee firm.
Absolutely. We would love to hear from you about that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Are there any? Sir.
Good morning. My name is Dan Jacobson, and I am the chair of the Democratic Foundation of Orange County. The Democratic Foundation of Orange County is a PAC that is the heart of the Democratic Donor Committee in Orange County. And many people who aren't in Orange County think Democrat Orange County doesn't make sense. We're number two in the number of Democrats in out of the 58 counties in California. So I just have to get that in there. But I'm here to represent our donors and also to plead on behalf of our political leaders in Orange County, many of which have been hit. Orange County was particularly we were hit with a lot of problems because of this situation. I just to briefly set the stage. I sent a letter to Ms. Cassidy the other day, and I called this not only a crime in the penal sense, but also really in the larger sense, a crime against democracy. Because what has happened here is that the ability to, if things stay the way they are, the ability for the public to be able to choose their leaders is going to be squelched, or at least skewed quite a bit. And so I appreciate so much what you're doing here, which is really, I think, to try to unskew that to the extent that you can. I think that the guiding principle of whatever rulemaking or regulations or whatever you do, I think should be that a committee or a candidate should be able to receive what that person is supposed to receive, what that committee is supposed to receive. If that's $3,900 from an individual, that's what the person should be able to receive. Now, at this point, someone in my foundation, in our foundation, may have donated $3,900 to Assemblyman Solaria or someone, and he really didn't receive it. Doesn't have it. It's gone. So that person should be able to give that money anew, and really, Assemblyman Solario should be able to receive it for the first time. So that's the guiding principle that I think. And I do not envy you the job of how to put such guiding principles into action. However, a couple of ideas have come to mind. One is that we kind of start at zero. But another is that if, let's say, the Durkee records, which from what I've seen, the records were right. It just wasn't money backing the records. Which was kind of a big deal, but nonetheless, the numbers from what I have seen and heard appear to have been correct, or pretty correct. So, if the records show that someone was supposed to have $4, and someone really only has $1, then a formula based on the percentage there should be able to be implemented. Now, I'm not a doctor, I'm a lawyer, because I don't know math. But someone who does know math may be able to come up with that appropriate formula. It doesn't seem like it would be that difficult for someone with a brighter mind than mine. I also wanted to give some information. The foundation actually was a client of Durkee & Associates also. Fortunately, we had very little money in the account at the time that this all came down. We had just spent a lot of money on voter registration, and it's just before we begin our annual dinner fundraising. I'm trying to claim credit for this low ebb, but I can't figure out how to do it. Maybe you could put out an official fact sheet that says that I did it. But I got a call yesterday from, I think, someone named Maria, from the bank, from First California Bank, saying, would you like your statements? I said, yes. And she said that she was going to be emailing them to me shortly. I just checked my email, and I don't have it yet, but maybe there is something afoot where some people are going to be able to get those statements. And once you, because I think that would be so helpful to you, if we have, we really know, because I think we can know from Durkee's records what should have been, and then from the bank records, we would know what is, and then the appropriate formula can be worked out based on those facts. So thank you for defending against this crime against democracy.
Thank you, Mr. Jacobson. Is there anybody else in the... Ma'am.
My name is Nancy Warren, and I'm a professional treasurer for my firm, Warren & Associates, in the Bay Area. I'm also the legislative vice president of the California Political Treasurers Association. I'm speaking to you today. I think that our great representatives from our longtime law firms have done a great job of identifying the problems that our larger clients are having. I want to speak to you about our tiny little tiny clients that Brad started, mentioned in his speaking. The one thing that I want you to really think about is that a lot of these small police officer association PACs and city PACs, they have $8,000 in their missing account, and they probably aren't going to get any of that back, and they can't afford to hire an attorney. They can barely afford to hire a firm like mine to help them through this process. And I would say the majority of them out there aren't even aware that a problem exists. So I'm getting calls, this week they're starting to build of these tiny association PACs where people are saying, oh, my God, I didn't know my account is missing. So I would like to request that in your thinking and in the results that you produce, that you do keep in mind these unrepresented associations and PACs where they aren't going to be able to spend any money to help themselves, and that there may be something that could be done that could give them a fix that wouldn't require them to lose every single penny that they had in their PAC fund. And that's really my only comment for today. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else in the audience that's interested in speaking about this subject? Okay. We will then go to the telephone. Are there...
Our seniors, few are young members. Mark Twain has been a frugal spending club because of our main fundraiser in 4 years to open...
Could you... Excuse me. I'm sorry. We didn't get the beginning of your presentation or your name. If you could please identify yourself and then start anew. I'm sorry. We got you in the middle.
All right. I'll start again. My name is Lillian Gonzalez, and I am the president of Mark Twain Democratic Club. We have been in existence since 1967. Therefore, many of our members are seniors. Very few are young members. We're still working on getting young members in to help the seniors. Mark Twain has been a frugal spending club because of our main fundraiser is every 4 years we save all funds to open a presidential headquarters in Whittier, which is a very Republican area, and we need that desperately. So we work towards every 4 years to save those funds, which we did. We had saved $10,028. And we thought that was going to get us by, and now we have no money. Our membership pays for our newsletters, posting, printing, and our supplies. So now without money, we don't have any funds for printing our newsletter, as most of our seniors don't have computers, and if they do, they don't understand them. At this point, we have been calling our members to renew their membership so that we could print a newsletter and have something for them to hold on to till we can find out if we're ever going to recover our money. So we are hoping that something will come of this. I know you're doing the best you can, and we really appreciate it. We will just wait to keep posted on it. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Next. Is that it? Is there another speed person on the phone?
Hello?
No? I guess everybody wants to go to L.A. Okay. Any further comments from the audience? I think...
Hello?
Good morning. Could you... Good morning. Can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Thank you.
My name is Hake Barachanian. I'm treasurer of Democratic Club of West Orange County. And in general, well, I unfortunately signed the First California letting them off the hook on their and they did provide me with bank statements earlier this week. It only went back 20 months, and it looks like most of the problem in the discrepancy of our accounts were prior to that. So it gets very complicated. We do have our records, our own records that we have kept, and rebuilding that would be one big mess. And they probably took the money back when we had our campaign office in 2008. The monthly statement, Excel statements they gave us, we didn't check them super thoroughly, but we did a lot of random checks in general, and I went back and looked at a lot of that, and there was no obvious errors in the actual reporting they gave us. So going back, there was one case in the 20 months in which they withdrew $5,000 and had a no funds available, two or three checks that didn't go through, and they put the $5,000 back in. Now, that could have been just an error rather than a fraud, but it was probably part of the problem of them moving money around and not watching what they were doing. And that's our situation. So we have lost a significant amount of our funds. Going ahead, and it's been described by the other people. So that's just my statement.
Thank you very much for participating. Are there any other telephone comments?
Yeah, you have Philip Ong from California Comic Cause. Thank you for holding this. I just want to make sure you can hear me. There's a little bit of an echo. We submitted a letter that is on the FPPC website. We're grateful to hear the chairwoman say that the FPPC is seeking narrow extensions or narrow solutions to the problem. Comic Cause has... we are sympathetic to the committees that were affected and the candidates that were affected. However, we are also we're holding the line pretty strict on the current expenditure or contribution limit. And we look forward to working with the commission to solving this issue. That's a pretty quick comment. Most of our substantial comment is in our letter. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there
Hello?
Any? Yes. Good morning.
Hi. Am I on?
Yes, you are. Could you identify yourself, please?
Am I on?
Yes, you are. Could you identify
this is,
yourself, please?
This is Beth Crom. I am from Irvine, California.
This is Beth Crom.
And I am turning down the volume here on my computer so I don't hear myself. thank you very much for this opportunity. It's been very informative to be able to watch this. I have the distinction of having been named in the federal action as my congressional account apparently had money moved in and out of it, but have never received any information from federal authorities and so remain still quite in the dark about all the particulars. But as I've been watching and listening to the other speakers, I wonder what role the FPPC might be able to play. You know, the interpleader action has sort of put a barrier between the candidates and the information related to their accounts. The requirements that the banks have put forward has further complicated that. And I'm just wondering, FPPC obviously is both an informational source and an enforcement body here in California, and I think like most candidates who are affected by this situation, we've always worked very hard to comply with all the requirements and now find ourselves sort of whipsawed in this kinderjerky situation. And I'm wondering whether the FPPC has any ability to act as a partner, in a sense, with all of the affected committees and candidates to attempt to secure information from the banks, to attempt to get the tools, because I would agree that for most candidates affected, the cost of legal defense, the cost of hiring legal support is just not something that's even practical. So I just don't know what other tools the FPPC might have to intercede on behalf of those affected campaigns on your behalf to secure the documentation that may be more difficult for even us to get since the interpleader action has been taken. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. While that is not a typical role for the FPPC, I certainly understand the problems that candidates are facing in this regard, and I've asked Zach Borazzini, our general counsel, to look at that issue. Yeah, are there any other people on the phone? Okay. All right. Thank you very much for your participation. Thank everybody also here in the audience for your participation. And as I indicated at the beginning, we welcome further comments, thoughts with respect to the issues that have been raised today and any ideas about potential solutions that you have that go beyond what's been mentioned here today. We're very open to hearing from the community. So thank you very much for coming.